Freedom is the right to tell what they do not want to hear. CNN, MSNBC, Fox News. Tired of the same repetitive government narratives? Then wave goodbye to the distractions and rhetoric of corporate media. For this is Anti-Media Radio.
I want to get the language right.
The government is in trouble.
What we need in the United States is not violence and lawlessness, but is love and wisdom and compassion toward one another.
What's your definition of me?
And now, here's your host, S.M. Gibson.
Big Daddy Trump is a sleazy fraternity, bro, and he's treating you like a drunk girl at a kegger. He's telling you exactly what you want to hear, and the second he gets what he wants, he's not even going to return your calls. It is March the 4th, 2016. My name is S.M. Gibson, and you are listening to Anti-Media Radio. I know typically on Friday nights you are joined by LaVon. She is out this evening, so I have taken over her spot. A lot going on in the news. We're going to try to steer you more towards some real news as opposed to the last couple of episodes where I have basically just ranted like a lunatic about the elections. In studio tonight is our director and producer, Mr. Shannon Madden. Shannon, how are you?
What's going on, Mr. Gibson? How you doing?
Oh, can't complain, sir. I guess, real quick, let's get it out of the way. Where are you at with the WWE theater?
Daddy, you mean? Yeah. You talking about Daddy? Oh, you know how I feel about Daddy. Daddy's got this whole thing sewn up. So much so that we might possibly, just possibly, everybody keep your fingers crossed, we might actually get Justin Bieber to move back to Canada. Oh, man, that would be so awesome.
Yeah, I'm going to go with it.
Yeah, yeah.
We've actually got a story up. We're going to have the wonderful Claire Burnish on here in a little bit, so I'm going to hold off and talk about that story. But the headline is, lawmakers just passed a proposal to ban Donald Trump from entering Mexico. It is on the front page right now, theantimedia.org. We'll talk to Claire about that story. I'm going to run down the top stories of the day, and you just jump on the website and read them for yourselves. Syria Assad calls for elections, offers amnesty to Syrian rebels. Facebook's Latin America vice president arrested for refusing to give up data to law enforcement. New grocery store sells food other stores would have trashed. Shelves empty daily. Legalizing weed has done what $1 trillion in a 40-year war couldn't.
Wow.
And another one. This is just a horrible story. Cops woke up naked woman, ordered her to produce a gun, and then killed her.
Mm.
Yeah, that's a, she was a grandmother, too. It's a really sad story. It's actually in Kansas, where...
where I'm headed to. Mm.
But it was three police officers crept into her bedroom while she was sleeping. And she was unclothed, and they were demanding to know where her gun was. She was following orders, going along with what they were telling her to do, and I'm sure they weren't being exactly pleasant about it. And then they just shot her dead in her own bed. Her daughter is now suing the city of Gardner, Kansas. That's just a really, really terribly sad story. And unfortunately, this has happened all too often. It's all too often in our society.
So let me get this straight. So they break into this lady's house, and basically just break in. She's asleep, in bed naked. And they wake her up, tell her, hey, do you have a gun? So she gets up. Does she even put any clothes on? Gets up and shows them the gun, and then they...
It's... Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and bring on Claire Burnish. Claire, how are you doing?
I am doing well. How are you?
I can't complain. I feel like I'm on NPR right now with this new sound.
You kind of sound like you're on NPR, and I've noticed this. Yeah. When we start the shows out, because you'll eventually ease into it, but now that we have the microphone set up, and when we start the show, you kind of sound like, you know, that, what's the guy that does, like, echoes on NPR?
I don't
know. Hi, this is John Deliberto, and welcome to Hearts of Space.
Oh, that's the word.
Now I feel like I need a mic, too.
Yeah, you ought to grab one. I thought about just having, you know, like one of those little Mr. Microphone things there for a while, just so I could feel like I was, you know. Remember the Mr. Microphone? Everybody had one of those when they kid. When you talked into it and had the little reverb spring in it.
Slow jams. Okay, back to more serious issues. Claire, I don't know if you saw the story on the site today about the lady in Kansas who the cops shot her in her bed demanding to know where the gun was.
Yes.
But we were just talking about that before you called in. What's your overall impression of the story?
I think that actually my impression of the story has more to do with this whole atmosphere of how police are acting in general. And that would be that it seems as if the nation's police force in collective are acting as rogue agents and are no longer doing anything to protect anyone's safety whatsoever and are just kind of doing whatever it is they feel like they can get away with because they do get away with it.
You know, but I still think it goes back more to the police unions and how they bully, I think, even, you know, the good cops. They bully them. They get what they want. They do what they want. They, you know, they threaten, you know, when there's a good cop that's going to say, hey, something's wrong here, it's the good cop that gets in trouble.
Yes, it is. And actually, I wrote a story many months ago about good cops that come forward and actually kind of say something about either bad policy or bad cops and how they get railroaded and blackballed and run over by both their departments and the union, and even, you know, nationally. And it's a huge problem. And that's why I say it almost seems as if police departments are rogue, you know, they're rogue agencies. They kind of behave how they feel like they can get away with, which is pretty much anything at this point. And that's really disturbing when you kind of take that in a political context as well, because, you know, it seems as if the citizenry doesn't really understand how bad this problem is. They're too willing to side with police just on a general basis without actually looking at each case. And I think the politicians are willing to do the same. And if that continues past the election, I think it could be an even worse situation, which is not good.
Oh, I think it could get much worse. You know, with all the stuff people talk about Daddy Donald Trump.
Daddy.
One thing people hardly ever mention is his policy on drugs and, you know, him always talking about the police force, you know, basically being 100% victims in every circumstance. And he sounds like he would be real strict, like, you know, he would kind of be a Reagan again when it came to the drug war.
Real strict, yeah.
Well, I think it would be worse.
After the Trump candidacy.
But it's like we feel like it's right about to, you know, all that's about to die down and go away.
We probably won't get to do this broadcast after he becomes president. Let's talk about that. And that's already been popped up, and you can Google that, but there's already been a few people have speculated what a post-Trump presidency, once he finally gets in the White House, what the media is going to look like and what they're going to act like and sound like when he's in office.
Let's face it, there's kind of a dichotomy here. I mean, we're probably looking at a Hillary versus Trump election, and there are very awful points with Trump, who is either taken as a joke or he's taken as such a lunatic that he won't get in office. So all of his policies they're not moot. They're just so terrifying people don't want to deal with them. But there is also Hillary, who claims to be one thing and yet either flip-flops or hides the truth about her issues, that she is equally as frightening. So we're looking at two very terrifying candidates likely going into office will make both journalism and police brutality and all of these things. I mean, this is huge. People say, like, it's ridiculous not to vote because, you know, you have to vote so that the worst evil doesn't get into office. At this point, I'm looking at two evils that neither should get into office. So the idea of voting is so moot in itself. I don't know how else to explain it to people.
Sadly, that's something that a lot of people just won't wake up to. But at the same time, I feel like we are headed in the right direction because of, for whatever you say about, you know, Trump, he is the FU candidate towards what we've been fed. And I think the same can be said for Bernie Sanders. I don't think if a 74-year-old independent out of the closet socialist was running against anybody else, they would have this much success. I don't think we've gone that far left yet in this country. But I think I think it's a reaction to Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
And young people are stupid and they just hear, ooh, it's, you know, they don't know what they believe. They just know it's trendy to like Bernie Sanders.
Mm-hmm. Well, remember, not too terribly long ago, it was trendy to like Barack Obama.
Yeah, how'd that work out?
Oh, yeah.
But is it really, is Bernie Sanders really that left of a candidate? I mean, he's not a war hawk, but he still supports war. He's voted to fund every war, that even the ones he's voted against. So is it really that much of an alternative? Is it really that radical to be voting for Bernie Sanders? I mean, is he really a revolution? No, I don't think so.
No, I don't.
So what you're suggesting is that Bernie Sanders is just offering up some lip service? Is that... that's right. He's a politician. Never mind. Yeah, continue.
And it's crazy because he's not establishment. It's like he's been in office for 30 years.
He is establishment.
Is he not?
He's just another flavor.
That's it.
The kind.
He is. And I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt. I mean, I just think his stance is appealing. I understand that what he had to say is appealing. And there was an analysis of his platform, like in terms of taxes and stuff, and it looks very positive. But no matter what, he's still proposing to fix government with more government. That is not a solution.
You cannot fix government with more government. I mean, it's the same as I'm drowning. So what do? You put more water on top of my head. That's what government is, and that's how they keep trying to fix it. Let's just spend more money. Let's just make it bigger and bigger.
And let's give some family members a job on the meantime. Make them, I don't know, I have a term for folks like that. Hillary Clinton, chief of, or queen of all of them. Welfare whore. Yeah. So, seriously, they have, you know, Hillary Clinton has made her whole entire living off of our money.
She has.
Think about it. I mean, her whole entire career has consisted of her, you know, making money off of us.
Look at these three candidates you have. Hillary Clinton, who wants to, I mean, she takes money from the bankers and big oil and companies like, or corporations like Walmart. She's done this her entire career. You have Trump, who doesn't seem to give a crap about anything at all. It's logical. And you have Bernie, who wants to fix government with more government. I mean, you cannot get much more tabloid-esque of an election than this.
How disgusting is it that Trump probably has the cleanest money of all of them?
Well, he at least he didn't eat a booger on live TV the other night. So,
Mr. Goldman Sachs?
I don't think that was a booger. I think that was his tentacle, but whatever. I have my own theories on that. Because then again, I mean, you know, and we pretty much narrowed it down to those three, but any of the other folks that have stood up on that dais at some point in time, it just, I mean, your career welfare whores, every single one of them.
They are. And, you know, that's the story. What was it? Bernie was 40 years old and didn't have any money.
Mm.
You know, was broke, never had a job, whatever story is, blah, blah, blah.
Well, he should have went to that Trump University. He'd have figured out the art of the deal real quick.
Hey, the art of the deal is brainwashed half of America right now.
I think that was probably the worst hit that Trump took last night. And even then, it just rolled right off of him. I mean, you know, I think in a roundabout way, he did teach those people how to get rich. And I think that, you know, you can argue it however you want to.
That man took a stone cold stunner.
Yeah.
You really think
yeah.
that something Ted Cruz is going to say to him is going to faze him?
Or especially little Marco.
Oh, buddy.
He wiped the floor with that dude last night. Of course, Fox News didn't help either, man.
You know, I think that at this point, this election is so far gone and the candidates themselves are so moot in terms of dealing with anything involved in change. I think it's time for people to realize that the change is going to have to happen on our own. Like, we're going to have to drop kind of out of the system and, you know, grow your own food and work with each other instead of working within this government sphere, because obviously they are not going to be helping us.
Absolutely. Mm. Well, what else? What else we got? What's going on with you, Claire? How are you tonight?
I'm doing really well today.
Well, good.
I tell you what, Claire, I want to get into a story that went up on the antimedia.org yesterday that started going pretty viral. Monsanto is suing California for telling people the truth about its chemicals.
Yeah.
Jump into this and tell everybody why this is a big deal.
So I think that at this point, probably most people have heard of PCBs, which are kind of on the same level as glyphosate in terms of being probable carcinogens or, you know, at least very toxic chemicals. And they have permeated waterways and drinking water and the environment and the atmosphere. And there is legislation that's being proposed to reform the Toxic Chemicals Act, which is like, you know, 30-year-old legislation that needs to be reformed. Everybody agrees this needs to be reformed. But there are so many problems with the reforms that have been proposed for this legislation that it's really going to harm everybody. And Monsanto was written in their own special paragraph to exempt them from being held responsible for the PCBs that they manufactured and let loose basically into the environment in this country. And they say that it was, you know, they didn't mishandle the PCBs. Everybody else did, so it should be the cities and the localities and the state's responsibility to clean them up. But they manufactured them. They came up with the formula. They gave them to industry, and they don't want to be held responsible. And their paragraph in this new reform will, like, leave them exempt, basically, if it goes through as is. So it's a big deal.
They just do what they want. They just,
yes, they really do.
They won't. And
in so many ways.
And that's the big thing, I think, when you hear criticisms of the march against Monsanto. You know, we know my absolute feelings towards the scientific arena. You know, and the whole GMO thing. I'm not a scientist. I can't tell you if it's bad for you, if it's good for you. I hear what both people say on both sides. I don't know for myself. At the same time, Monsanto is a lot bigger and a lot more evil than just the GMOs. These chemicals that are 100% doing harm to people, that they get caught doing it, and yet they just still do what they want. And they're still so interwoven and intertwined with the government, they go back and forth from being a lobbyist, or they go get a government job, and they control it from both ends.
And then you have, like, Clarence Thomas, who used to be a Monsanto lawyer, who sits on the Supreme Court. And you have, I believe Hillary Clinton is associated with Monsanto. I mean, it is insidious, and it is not going away. And this corporation is, they get away with whatever it is that they want to get away with. I mean, literally, figuratively, in every way, they get away with what they want to get away with. And they have poisoned the environment. They have tainted the environment. They are tainting our crops. You look at the kind of agribusiness farmers who have to wear protective clothing to apply glyphosate to the crops that they turn around and sell us to eat. This is produce that we're going to just put on the dinner table in salads and stuff, and we're just supposed to eat it, not with protective clothing. I mean, this is insanity to think that this corporation gets away with what they do.
And another thing, I was talking with my dad yesterday about a friend of his that was in Vietnam, and all of a sudden starts having seizures, starts having all these major, major health issues. Guess what? Agent Orange.
Yeah.
Straight from Monsanto.
And when you get the corporation that starts out with something like Agent Orange and, you know, weaponized herbicides and everything else, and you want to turn them around and let them loose on our food crops, what do you expect?
But, you know, again, they're married, corporation and the government.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why this is an oligarchy. It's very...
So, in other words, if we have more government, we'd have more corporation, right? Isn't that how that works? Wait a minute. So why are all the corporations leaving and going overseas? Oh, strange how all this is working. Something's up here.
And, you know, I take issue with oligarchy. I think it's more like a plutocratic corporatocracy. I really believe that firmly.
I'm tell you what, I want to see if I can play a clip here that ties into all this.
Yeah, this is where the show went downhill last night.
Yeah, it did. So if it doesn't work.
We were doing so good, too.
Well, hang on, everybody. Here we go.
Donald Trump is an American nationalist in an old-fashioned sense. We have been governed by elites, and I've been part of it. Look, I helped pass NAFTA. I mean, I've been through all this stuff. And the question is whether or not you think we need to take a deep breath and rethink some of what we're doing. We've had a very clear policy since World War II. We have built a worldwide system that has worked reasonably well. And the Trump argument is that system now no longer serves American interests. It serves Chinese or Russian or other interests. Now, this is a real honest fight. And the traditional national security group in the Republican Party is appalled by the degree to which Trump would disrupt the system that's been built since World War II. All right, so...
See if you heard what I heard with that. Did he not just say, of course we're run by elites? I know. He goes, I helped pass NAFTA. Just assuming that was, you know, some establishment run through, which we know that it was. Then continues to go on saying that after World War II, we've built this world empire and it's now not serving us anymore. And Trump wants to get rid of it. Is that what I just heard?
Pretty much, yeah.
Just completely, just out in the open.
Yeah, no holds barred. I mean, that's the way. And I've remarked on this quite a few times, and this applies to the police state. This applies to what's going on in Washington right now. It's not even subversive anymore. It's completely out in the open. And even when it is kind of sort of subversive and we get an email that we're not supposed to get or a heavily redacted piece of paper And okay, well, okay, there is a little bit of smoke here. Here, here's your thing. Now go away. You know, and that's pretty much about it. And they've gotten more bold and more brazen about it. I mean, that's the part that really needs to scare people, is that they don't care anymore.
No, they really don't care anymore. I think the thing that people seem to be missing, and actually Glenn Greenwald kind of pointed this out in The Intercept today, yes, Trump might be kind of, you know, considered counter to the establishment to a degree, but what he's really doing is kind of, he's touting the issues and touting the mood and the feelings that were there in the establishment all along. He's just more candid about them. He's not actually some radically different, I don't know, position than anybody else. He's just more honest about it.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, the thing is that Trump is corporate America personified. He's the corporate Jesus. And there he is hanging up on the cross for all the world to see.
He is the poster child of capitalism.
And it's exactly what we're talking about the boldness and the brazenness. Yeah, so I gave money to so-and-so. It's a big deal. We were remarking on this last night watching the debate. Yeah, I did such and such. I murdered a puppy. What about it? You murdered a puppy before, I'm sure. Yeah, but anyways, that was disgusting. You asked that. Next question. And I mean, that's the attitude, the arrogance. Yeah, okay, I know I'm a horrible, evil person, so what about it? I'm making money over here. I'm making deals. And I want to make deals for you, America.
I want to go ahead on that note and bring on another guest, the editor-in-chief of the Fifth Column
the
News.
Man.
And the man...
The legend.
Whose quote is up on Facebook right now about Big Daddy Trump. Justin King. Justin, how's it going?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
Can't complain, sir. So, haven't spoken to you since everything has completely imploded on itself. What's your overall take of WrestleMania?
I'm in complete shock. I can't believe I'm watching what I'm watching. I honestly expected it to be, you know, flamboyant and crazy when it first started. And then, you know, the crazy folks would be dropped out and we'd be left with, you know, the normal standard cookie cutter candidates. And we're not.
This has definitely gone somewhere else. A friend of mine and me have joked for months, and probably thousands of other people have too, how long is it going to be till Trump actually tells everybody that he's well endowed? We just joked.
Beautiful hands too, I might add.
We just joked that it was going to happen.
Yeah.
And sure enough, last night it happened. At some point, he's going to take it out for everybody to see.
You know, that might happen. It really might. At this point, nothing would surprise me.
I never thought we would be here. And then you've got Marco Rubio, who I'm still convinced was the guy from day one. He was the plan.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just giving the foam party background music there. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And
I got overtaken by the spirit.
He's out. He's out. He's gone.
He's out. Yeah. Nah, he ain't out yet. He's still off in there.
Everybody
got some white shoes on. With the foam all over.
Those shoes scream out.
Yeah. Everybody thought that was like a shock. And I'm like, really? Y'all didn't see that coming.
I can't believe nobody said anything about Ted Cruz yet. Oh, that is a big old closet queen if I've ever seen one. Don't give me that. Anyway.
But yeah. I mean, Trump looks like he's going to be the Republican candidate, and it looks like the Democratic Party will push Hillary, even though that may not be what the party wants. It looks like that's what the elders will do, and we are left with, a disaster. I don't know what to say. saying.
Yeah, Trump is like the herpes of the Republican Party. They cannot get rid of that shit. That whatever they want to do, whatever medication they got, some they're putting some Romney on it right now. Let's hope that works, Amy. I got to rub that Romney in real good around the infection area.
Whew. So okay, here's my question to both Claire and Justin. What are the chances that this is real and this is just some lunatic running through the wall screaming at the top of his lungs? Or how possible is it that the plan is actually to get Trump in there? Like, is this just some brilliant propaganda?
No, nobody wants him in there for real. Come on, man.
See, is it real? Because have you ever seen mainstream corporate media talk about, oh, the establishment, the anti-establishment, over and over and over and over. You see that word.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
well, they're trying to convince people that Trump is anti-establishment.
That's it. That's what I'm saying. Is this the plan to get?
I think they're just rolling with the punches, doing what they do, and you know, they want, you know, Fox News and these guys say they want the Republican Party to take the White House, regardless of who it is. And I mean, it just blows my mind that the American people have decided to buy into the line that the trust fund baby billionaire that went to private schools is anti-establishment. I mean, he's the definition of establishment.
I mean, he openly says, yeah, I paid both sides. That's how you do business. I bought politicians right and left.
So weird.
And I think that also, you know, they didn't necessarily want Trump to be the front runner, even though obviously it was time for a Republican candidate. I think Trump took them by surprise, and his popularity took everybody by surprise. And I think that they're kind of trying to run with it and trying to play him off as anti-establishment. Even though, like I said, he's right in there in the establishment. He's just more open and honest about what was there all the time.
Okay, here's another thing I noticed. In the debates, no matter if they go to Ted Cruz or they go to Marco Rubio, they cannot get five words in without saying the words Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. Now, the rules of the debate suggest if you mention the other candidate, they get more TV time.
Mm-hmm.
Every single question,
mm-hmm.
they throw it back to Trump, mm-hmm. to keep him on TV.
Beautiful hands.
I mean, if I was running against this goon, I wouldn't reference him ever. Because him on TV, people get riled up and, you know, start yee-hawing and throwing their cowboy hats up.
Yeah.
But they always throw it to him. Mm-hmm. Is it just me? Am I looking way too much into this?
I think the reason we're having a hard time digesting it is because we haven't seen a candidate or anything like this in the American political scene since the business plot. Trump, and I don't use this term lightly, Trump is a fascist.
Yes.
I mean that in the literal sense, not in the, oh, he's my political enemy and therefore I'm going to call him a name. No, I mean, he's an actual fascist. And they don't know what to do because he has this popular appeal, as fascists do, and he's rallying it to the detriment of them. I mean, he may actually be a candidate that could win on the third party run.
Oh, and we know. I believe he could. If it was Cruz, Trump, and Hillary, I think he would win.
Oh, yeah.
That's scary that somebody can galvanize the public that way.
Let me throw an alternative situation out here and say, why hasn't anybody proposed the possibility that maybe, just maybe, Trump could be working for the Hillary campaign?
That's out the window.
You think?
Yeah, I think that's out the window, too. The thing is, like, you know, kind of this harkens back a little bit to what Chomsky was saying and what, like, even the Mexican politicians have said. I mean, Trump is appealing to the kind of desperate nationalism that a desperate people need right now. I mean, people don't have much. They've suffered with the economy. They've suffered with, you know, politics and policy and everything else. Everything is going downhill, and so they're looking for something that, at least to them, appears strong. And Trump, no matter how much of a fascist, you know, moronic fool he might be, people see that as a strong leader, and they're grasping for anything, and so they see that and they grasp for it. Like, the same way that people are grasping at Bernie, because even though he's proposing government to save government, he appears to have policy that is appealing to people.
He does have a speech, too. I mean, his little thing he's got worked up and all the little, you know, figures that he's, you know, compiled.
He's got expensive sparklers.
Very, very expensive. Very expensive.
Can you learn not to jerk that phone?
I know, but gosh, man. This is so big.
I'm absolutely terrified by Trump.
He's
not, you know, mm-hmm. Americans are used to politicians that run because they want to be, you know, they want money, they want power. Trump already has money and power. You know, he's not an ideologue. If you ever read his book, and if his voters, if his support base ever actually read his book, they would abandon him overnight. I mean, he's the exact opposite of what he's portraying himself to be, and which only leaves this arrogant, egomaniacal reason for running. You know, he's dangerous on a level that we haven't seen. I mean, it's been a very, very long time since something like this has reared its head in the developed world.
The 1930s.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same atmosphere that gave rise to Hitler. It really is. I really believe that, like, you know, like a bunch of academics are kind of touting right now. I think it's the same thing.
Such worse shape when Hitler came to power. Such worse shape.
No, it's worse now. I mean, then at least there was like some idea that the American dream was still alive. There is no illusion of that right now.
What do you think, Justin?
I'm gonna have to go with Claire. I think comparatively, if you look, yes, things are better in the sense of economics.
I've got to keep lying to myself, otherwise I will freak out.
But the disillusionment that people feel with the government, and they see him because they've been told he's anti-establishment. That, you know, he's going to change it. He's not going to. He's going to make it worse. I mean, this is a man, you know, you have people that are opposed to the police state that are supporting a man that wants to make it a death penalty, mandatory death penalty, to shoot a cop. I mean, that's insane.
Think about what he said about Snowden.
Yeah.
He's a spy.
Didn't he say that he was going to execute him at one point in time?
I believe so.
Yeah, I believe so. I want to say that was earlier on in the debates, but I want to say we brought that up on the show. I'll have to go back and check that out, but yeah.
If you want a macrocosm, you know, the macro idea of what he's going to do, just look individually at each rally and each debate that he's had and look at what he does with the crowd and look at how the crowd, in particular, his crowd, his followers, look at how they treat people who even have peaceful protests, who don't even say a word, who don't disrupt the audience. Look at what happens. If you want to see something terrifying, look to that.
I want to go ahead and jump to a caller right now. Thank you for holding area code 971. Thank you for calling Anti-Media Radio. This is your host, S.M. Gibson. Tell us your name and where you're calling from tonight.
Okay.
Well, all right.
Hey, but at least we could hear them. We know this is working now.
Hey, it is, I think.
You called me out on air last night, and that kind of hurt my feelings, asshole.
It'll be all right.
Man, I found the most incredible thing just a second ago. There is available on YouTube right now the Art of the Deal audiobook. I wonder if it's him. I wonder if it's him actually talking.
Well, you need to find out.
Oh, God, yeah. Let's do that right now. Okay. No, it's not him talking. That's gay. No, we're not going to do that now.
I have to say that I'm glad that Justin has said that he thinks that Trump is dangerous too, because I've faced a lot of criticism for saying so recently, I don't think people are taking it seriously enough, what he actually has the power to do. And I think in particular, because he is such a popularity hog, like, he will do anything to be popular. So even if his own policies and his own beliefs aren't necessarily so extreme, he listens far too much to people who pump up his more extremist ideology.
I'm going to freak out again.
Yeah, I mean, if I was Latino or Muslim and I lived in this country, I would be buying a weapon. I would buy a rifle. I think that needs to be on the shopping list of just about any person of color in this country. You know, I mean, those of us on the call, you know, we're going to be all right, but there's a lot of people that won't. And I mean, I don't. It's one of those things that people always say, you know, it can't happen here. It can, and it will, because we're so disillusioned that this idiot's leading people in the desert, and they're going to end up drinking sand.
Here we go. Told you. I was talking about this the other night, actually, and about how kind of serious I think this is, and how it just ties into a lot of different stuff. It really reminds me of the story of Jesus a little bit, because it was the church that delivered Jesus up to Rome.
Mm-hmm.
It was the church. It wasn't the scholars. It wasn't the intellectuals. It wasn't the people that weren't involved in that. It was the church. It mm-hmm. was the common people. It's happening again. Like, that's going to be the demise of the human race.
Well, Daddy, why are you gonna be so mean?
Like, I think he wants. And what was the thing? The safe zones. He wants to have safe zones.
Safe zones.
I mean, that's just a fancy FEMA word camp. For yeah. Put immigrants in safe zones, and no red flag for anyone.
Yeah, he just single-handedly lost the Asian American vote with that one.
No, he didn't. No, yeah. He didn't. He'll get more support.
Well, he'll get some more support. And just like Justin pointed out, those people supporting him will not be people of color.
I, you know, every time that we talk about Trump, I'm still reminded of Pastor, I think his name is Niemeyer, who wrote First Day Game Poor. I mean, Trump has every sign of being a fascist dictator. And not just, it's not as if he necessarily would do that on his own. It's just, like I said, his supporters are going to prop him up, and he is fed by that. And it's dangerous. I think that's even more dangerous than just if he were that way on his own.
No, you're right. Absolutely.
The very terrifying, and it's terrifying because the American people are apparently this dumb, is that if he had a D after his name, instead of an R, you know, usually allied with the Democratic Party, and he said the things that he was saying, people would be screaming about the New World Order and the UN coming to take over and, you know, FEMA camps. And but because he, you know, decided to run as a Republican, even though he's, you know, supported the Democrats his entire life, he's getting a pass on this. Like, nobody seems to...
He's getting a pass on everything that comes out of his mouth.
It's incredible.
Everything. I'm going to bring jobs back to America, suits Mexico, like everything he makes. He's like, well, yeah, you know, it's cheaper.
Well, yeah, sometimes you got to send stuff over there. Yeah. I mean, that's the only way you can make money. And I said, it's all about making deals. You know, I'm a deal maker. It's all about
and
deals.
And last night they asked, I can't remember what the question was. They asked him something. He's like, I'm changing, flipping right now. Different position.
Yeah, I mean, I make deals right all the time. Second. Sometimes you have to change your position in order to, you know, get your best position in making the deal. The deal. The deal. So what is the deal?
I don't trust him.
Mm. Well, we know what the deal is.
And then he's suckering people. He's suckering Ron Paul people in because of this. He mentioned the Fed once.
Yeah.
And he's...
There's no candy in that van.
Mm-mm.
None.
And then he's... talked about the Saudi Arabia connection with 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
He hinted about it last night. And so he starts getting, like, he's pulling from everywhere.
Yeah.
He's pulling Democrat.
You hate Mexicans? Great. Hey, I hate Mexicans too. We'll send them all back over there and make them build a wall as soon as they get behind them. Let's make a deal with them. Yeah.
I can't believe that man used that word.
Hey, but one way you're going to make that deal, well, there's a couple of ways you're going to make that deal.
Can't believe that man used that word. I would never use that word. Never.
And if they pull that wall, starve them out.
I mean, I'm an open borders kind of guy, but even if you wanted, you know, a closed border system, building a wall to stop a nation of people that have built, the only people that build more sophisticated tunnels than the Viet Cong is, I mean, it's insane. I mean, it doesn't even work on its surface. It's not going to keep them out. It'll keep us in.
We haven't
made exactly.
Okay, think about this. There's a man running for president that's openly saying, I want to spy on everyone.
Mm-hmm.
The guy that told you the truth, I want to behead.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get rid of every brown person in the country.
Yeah, why not?
We're really going to spy on them.
Yeah, let's whiten it up.
We're going to have safe zones / big concentration camps for these people. Oh. We can hoard them in so they're not out with you people. We're going to have a police state. And we're going to heighten the drug war, and we're going to love the cops. And I'm going to build a wall.
Does any of that sound like smaller government to you? That sounds like probably one of the
largest
governments ever. And I'm
going to build a wall around the country.
Yeah.
Like he's telling everyone,
be 45, be 50,
I'm going to
enslave
you.
You know, I work with a lot of great engineers, so it could be 60 foot. Who knows? I mean, you know, the sky's the limit. How high do you want your wall to be?
I just don't think that people take seriously enough the threat that he actually is. I don't think, I mean, just in conversation on social media and, you know, in articles, I don't think that people understand how serious of a threat he actually will be when he's in office. And it's not because necessarily that he is so staunch in one position, but it's more because he's just like the police. He's a rogue agent, and he's likely to do just about anything.
And he's capable of doing anything. All right, I want to go to another phone call right now. Area code 559. Thank you for calling Anti-Media Radio. This is your host, S.M. Gibson. Tell us your name and where you're calling from tonight.
My name is James Job. I'm from Fresno.
James from Fresno.
California.
What's on your mind?
So, I don't know. There's a few of you there that probably follow me, and I've been doing a lot of research with regard to damn near every presidential candidate since August of last year. And I've come to a conclusion that there is no changing this. So what we have now is these two front runners that are pretty much one and the same. And one guy decided to ruse a political party on the offensive to pull them in and rally the people behind him to get the delegates and the electorates and all the propagandized issues that surround an election. Because let's face it, if it was based off of a populace, it'd be a completely different story right now. But I've been researching Trump for the past few days with regard to his history, his current stance, everything he flipped on. And by the way, last night he flipped on Megyn Kelly. She said that he sided with Hillary Clinton with regard to assaults on bans on assault rifles. And he sided with her a couple of years ago. And last night while he was standing in front of a Fox newscast, he backed out and said he wasn't going to. He wanted to switch sides at that point. This entire, for lack of a better word, shit show is aimed around the oligarchy that owns this country, wherein our military industrial complex and our Federal Reserve system have bought out every candidate that we have in front of us anyway, and work the media system so that we only see specific tidbits of these few candidates. Wherein, I haven't watched all these presidential debates, but I watched the one last night, and I kind of actually laughed and had a little bit of respect for some of the Republican parties. Almost like they got together last night and said, wait, let's disavow Trump now before we all lose to him and we wind up with his policies, because I'm convinced now he's not sheepdogging for anybody. He actually is egotistical enough to think that he can win this. And it's going to be up to the people, apparently, but
I'm convinced he's going to win. I don't think there's any.
I am too.
I don't think so. I think Hillary will pull it off. But here's the problem with that. These two are best of friends. I mean, you don't show up to somebody's wedding and then 2 years later go, you know, go bashing them. It's all part of a political propaganda regime. And behind the scenes, you know, these people are rubbing shoulders with each other, chummy, going, you know, hey, how's Bill doing? I'm sure that if Clinton and Trump talks off the record, they're probably talking about their lives instead of actual political policies and things of this nature.
So that's the real winner in all this is Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton, he's going to win either way. Because, you know, if Hillary doesn't become president, I'm pretty sure she's finally going to divorce his ass.
It's the bank. She's bankrolled already. So,
yeah,
she has the backing she can get. And the Republicans have no idea what to do because there's so many different candidates. And that's where the irony lies in all this. There are more Republican candidates that are aiming to try and pull democracy into work for them right now. When all for the past 4 years, every single Republican you can lay your eyes on has been bashing Democratic values for the last 4 years, doing as much as they can to split the political parties between each other, which they're one and the same. But they want the populace to believe that there is a difference, and that's how they get this entertainment that they do on the television. I usually don't watch it, and last night I was kind of actually entertained by it, but. Usually it's disgusting to me, but right now I'm rather of the mind that we are actually seeing a shift where 4 years of the rhetoric between these two political parties that so have you they split each other apart now, and it doesn't matter what the people push with the amount of information that you can gather online, you can pretty much gather your own opinion. And we've seen a rise in independents that don't want to affiliate themselves. So wherein they can go, okay, they get a swing at that point. And the candidates know this. With exception to Trump, because he's just a lobbyist and he only knows where he can throw money at things to make things work for him. But where it's going to wind up riding is who has the contributions, where it's always been that way. Obama won over Romney because he had the backing to do it. He had the people out there canvassing, had the pamphlets printed up. He sent it out to every home in America. Romney didn't have the political backing to do that. He didn't have the financial backing to do that.
And that's where we went Romney back out. And, you know, it's really sad they're dusting him off to get involved. Thank you so much for the call tonight. Justin, I wanted to ask you about this, kind of something that the caller referenced. Typically, I do believe that, you know, politicians are in the back, buddy, going out for drinks afterwards. But the Clintons being the Clintons, especially Hillary, have made so many enemies from friends throughout the years. Do you think this is a deal where Trump and Hillary are high-fiving backstage, or do you think this is actually vicious going after her?
He's a fantastic senator. That's a quote from Donald Trump. They're buddies. They're friends. They always have been. He's right. She went to his wedding. Bill couldn't make it, but he made certain he made it in time for the reception because they're close. Because
Bill loves a good party.
Well, right.
And that's what the available tale is. Come on, man.
And he gave Clinton... the Clinton Foundation, some obscene amount of money. We're talking like $100,000 or something. I do think that they're buddy. But I think that Trump is doing what Trump does. He, businessman. And businesses are not ran by committee. They are not democracies. He wants to get to the top. And when he gets there, God help us all.
Yep.
I mean, people slam Obama over his use of executive orders. Wait. Wait for a Trump Trump presidency.
Pot, meat, and kettle.
And I really believe, as much as everybody has complained about Barack Obama, me included, I just have this like gut feeling that we're going to look back on Obama and be like, man, we had it so good.
Boy, I wish we could get that guy
back.
We
didn't even know Obama.
Barry, where are you?
Like, I've got that fear that that's going to happen.
Yeah.
That's the thing is, you know, you have politicians that are corrupt and incompetent. And that's what we have in most of our politicians, you know, and we're used to that. So that's what we expect. But that's not Trump. I think you're right. I think we're going to look back at Obama and even Bush and Carter and Reagan and all of these guys as saints after we see what this guy does. Because he does have the backing. Well, he has the popular backing. The only good news that I've seen come out of this is establishment. Now we're not talking about political establishment. We're talking about the military establishment. We're very high-ranking people, very influential people, are coming out and voicing. They're not being as overt as saying this guy is going to end up a dictator, but they are saying this guy is his policies. What he's saying make him a war criminal. He had the ex-director of the CIA come out and say that the U.S. military would have to disobey his campaign promises in order to do it. And that's important because, not to get too conspiratorial, but worst comes to worst, they'll pop it.
Would that be conspiracy?
No, we've discussed that openly on this show, that all Trump has to do is turn around the wrong corner without security standing there. It's done.
Yeah. I think they could get two birds with one stone out of it, because I think they can use and go, oh, it was ISIS. Oh, can you believe that? Your guy got killed. It was ISIS. Let's go.
And who would be his VP that would ascend the throne?
Oh, I don't think they'll even. I think it's going to be Bobby Kennedy, not Ronald Reagan. They're never going to let him put his hand on that Bible.
You think so? Uh-huh. They've let it get this far.
No. Look, Bobby got it in June, I think. Okay. We still got a ways to go.
Yeah, true.
I mean, I do think that's a real possibility, because, you know, it was, you had the ex-director of the CIA, you had the current director of the DIA, who I have a whole new respect for over the last year, because this man has just said, screw it. I'm not playing these games anymore. We had, and basically what happened was they had some of their own people get killed. This is an agency that lost, I think it's lost like 16 people in like 60 years of operations, and they lost 48 people in one day. And within a week, this guy, he's the guy that released the documents showing that we supplied ISIS. He's the guy, he's coming out against it. And this, the movie, and they talk about the covert ops that the CIA does. They plan them. But the guys that actually go out and do the dirty stuff, they work for this agency. And that's not an agency I'd want to have against me. I mean, that's what they do. They kill people.
Do you think it would be done under the premise of leading us into more war? Or do you think he'll just fall over dead of something?
I have no earthly idea. I think most of the intelligence establishment, as far as not the contractors, not the political appointees, but
Justin, that's it for us tonight. For Anti-Media Radio, we will be back Monday. For Claire, Justin, and Shannon, this is SM Gibson, Anti-Media Radio, out. I'ma let them know through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo.